But they take on the role. You know, they're going to play the part of a living human being so that we have a connecting point. So we can say, we can see the story or the real life of a man or a woman walking and doing and how they relate. And when the land was threatened, what did they do? And when the lawsuit was filed, what did they do? And when someone tried to take Sri Yukteswar's property away from him, what did he do? I mean, very straightforward. And so you see not only how did he behave, but what was his consciousness. And so you see that there's a connecting point, and then you see how it's transcended. And so then Swami writes, a drunken person who's celebrating his drunkenness and celebrating his debauchery and makes art out of his debauchery puts across a debauched vibration. And other debauchees, is that a word? You know, will like really like it. Boy, that's great art, you know, because bingo, it's right where they are and they can all look at it together and they can all just go down with it, right? And the Swami says, why say the people shouldn't do it? You know, if they want to do it, that's who they are. It's not up to us to say that they shouldn't. But a drunken person could make great art if his expression was his desire to transcend that. Isn't that just a beautiful way to put it? Because maybe he's filled with remorse. The Hound of Heaven was written by a man who was very down and out, and I think was addicted to opium, had a very difficult life, but his whole relationship to the experience he was having was the desire to transcend it. And so all of that failure and suffering and misery that he had gone through was then, and he was still in it. He wasn't free of it, but he was still yearning to get free. And that yearning brought this extraordinary inspiration in this The Hound of Heaven. Because in his suffering, he had this experience of God's desire to help you, and how every bad thing that had happened to him that he'd been so afraid of was really God trying to save him. The Hound of Heaven is that story about how the hound pursues him wherever he goes, and he just hears this relentless footfall, and he tries to hide in human love, and he tries to hide in this experience and that experience, and wherever he is, there's this relentless footsteps coming behind him, and then finally this dark shadow starts coming over. And then he realizes it's the hand of God coming down to lift him up. I mean, it's an extraordinary poem. Master used to recite it because he loved it so much. But that's just a perfect example, that he could never have written that without the experience he had. But he didn't celebrate his debauchery. He used it as the stepping off point, you see. And that's another way of saying that maybe Mozart did have his problems, right? But whatever he was actually experiencing in his life, he directed his energy toward this transcendence. And enough of him was freed from whatever he was struggling with, you know, because we don't evolve in an even fashion. We evolve very unevenly, and we can be very bound in this area and free in this area. You know, he had the energy and the desire for Mozart, had the ability to tune right into that. And whatever else was going on in his life, it wasn't the direction he was facing, you see? And also, the other thing that's what we always say about Ananda, it's not really where you are, it's which direction you're facing. And it's better if you're also moving. But you can be standing still as long as you're facing the right direction. I mean, eventually you have to move. But you can stop for a while and contemplate whether you're going to move. But just keep facing the right direction. And so that word is enormously important. And that's also important for those of us who are attempting to be creative in any way, that we mustn't ever think that I'm not worthy of doing this or I'm not good enough to do this. And again, Swami gives us such a perfect answer in this book, because he says, all you have to do is you have to be true to your experience. And he says it very wonderfully at the beginning of one of the chapters that we read. He said, don't make any comparisons. He said, the conscious mind is always comparing one thing to another. We can't help but do that. But the comparisons really have nothing to do with artistic expression, because what gives art and creativity its power is that it is a unique, it's a unique moment in time that only you can have. And whatever level of experience that is, if you're true to your experience, and then later on in this chapter he really talks about some sort of guidelines for really how to relate to your own experience. If it's your own genuine experience, then that's what you have to offer. And it will resonate universally because our own experiences are also universal experiences. We're all human beings. Swami, I haven't yet come to it in this book, but in other places he uses the wonderful word, he describes what is original in a very different way. He says that which is original is not that which has never been done before, but is that which springs from your own point of origin. Isn't that perfect? In other words, that it's true to you. It's true to your experience. And one of the ways in which art refines our consciousness is this, the ability to trust your own experience, to overcome the carping spirit even within ourselves and the conscious mind's tendency to try to make a whole out of lots of little pieces instead of intuitively perceiving reality. I mean, all of these things are what hold us back spiritually too. But it's sort of like we teach people the energization exercises after we've taught them to meditate. We teach them to sit and watch the breath and do the Hong Sam mantra. Almost all of you are trained in that, perhaps all of you. And then the second course is the energization exercises. And the first course, everybody comes in and does what people expect to do in a meditation course. They sit down and they meditate. They close their eyes and they sit silent. You come to the energization exercises and we teach people to go. And we say, that's meditation. And people think that we're crazy. Okay? But what we're really dealing with in the energization exercises, the rest of them, that's just the first of them. Again, almost all of you know them. But what makes it so difficult to meditate is because our mind runs away from us. And our mind running away from us is our lack of ability to focus our energy and hold it on the point that we're trying to hold it to. And we learn to meditate by practicing meditation. We learn to concentrate by practicing concentration. But if we can learn in a general sense to master and direct our energy, then we can apply that back to meditation. And it's easier if you can get your hands around it. So the energization exercises, so named because they have to do with creating energy and mastering it, are like a more graspable way to say, okay, I'll tense my arms and then I'll withdraw the energy and I'll relax. I'll find my left thigh and I will just tense that thigh. And then I'll just tense my calf. And then I'll just tense both my calves. And all of that concentration, and because it's tangible, it trains your willpower to focus on a goal and direct your energy. And then you sit to meditate, and really that's all you're doing. You're focusing on something and directing your energy. But we've practiced in a less abstract manner. So it is when we're trying to be creative and try to trust God and trying to be in the flow and to be in tune. It's all the same exercises that we use for spiritual life, except we have something more tangible to work with. The poem doesn't scan correctly. The song, the melody doesn't quite sound right. So you have to go deeper and meditate a little bit more and try to tune in a little bit more. And then suddenly it comes to you and you have this feeling of you know what it feels like. And that's what we're doing for the rest of our spiritual life too, you see. So it's a very good sadhana, just as simple as that. It's wonderful sadhana to be creative. Master always said, you know, write, if you read 2 hours, write 3 hours. If you write 3 hours, meditate 5 hours. And he'd always just put in there, be creative, because of what it would do for us. Comments or questions or thoughts? Okay, there's a few things here now I just want to be sure and touch. Swami spends a little bit of time in a whole chapter trying to explain to us exactly what intuition is. Because intuition, the development of intuition, the use of intuition, and the creating through intuition is really the key here to upward moving energy. And he makes the distinction, you know, he talks about just very calm feeling. And it's an important point to understand because too often when we're talking about yoga, and being even-minded and cheerful and all of the different things that we sometimes associate with it, people still have a little trouble in their mind not thinking that somehow that's denying some aspects of life or taking away some desirable aspects of life or dulling down our feelings or how boring it would be. And so we're always, Swami's always trying to make it clear that the more refined our experiences, the deeper our experiences, the more centering our experiences, the deeper our experiences, and how so much of what we have come to think of as pleasurable is really just rocking on the waves, and that it really isn't as much fun. It makes us more seasick than we realize, even though in our initial enthusiasm we think that this is the wave that's going to stay up forever. And so he's trying to get us to feel that the power of intuition is the power of, as he says over and over again, calm feeling, where everything that we're trying to get intensity out of emotion, but we're actually, what we're doing when we try to get intensity out of emotion is we move to the edges of our experience and try to make it feel, he uses the image sometimes of taking a hose and by crimping it and trying to make the jet sort of skinny and squeezing the power through a small hole, that's real power, instead of relaxing and opening it up. And then the whole river can flow through us at that time. And so he is always expressing to us that intuition, which is the link between the rational and the superconscious mind, intuition is how the superconscious speaks to us, can only come to us when we get off of the roller coaster. Because the roller coaster by its very nature is on the edges, and intuition has to be in the unifying center of things. And so he, does that make sense? I mean, people know what intuition is. It's not like it's that hard to say. But later he spends a lot about how you have to get you, emotion clouds your clarity, and when your clarity is clouded, it's very hard to be really inspired. And he talks a lot, and I must say I have certainly experienced this. I was joking with Sharon earlier today. I mean, my particular creative expression is primarily through words, through these words, and then sometimes through written words, yes. I was just seeing a note here that I really enjoyed. I wrote to myself when Swami says, you know, when an artist makes a piece of art, what he's really giving you is himself, and it's not just a matter of technique. You have to ask yourself, would I like this man as a friend? Because you put his art or her art in your house, he's sort of talking to you all the time. And would you really want that person to be in your house talking to you all the time? One of my friends talks about how through her entire childhood, there was this charcoal drawing on the wall in the dining room just across from where she sat. And it was this man just anguished like this. She would just have to stare at it, you know, for all growing up. And she, you know, in retrospect, she thinks, why would my parents have wanted such a tortured image on the wall? And it was clearly a tortured image that was not aspiring to be untortured. It was just celebrating its own anguish. But many people will, you know, think of things like that. This is, again, what Swami's saying. Well, it's a well-executed piece, and it really conveys that sense of extreme despair. But would you really like want someone sitting in your house expressing extreme despair all the time? You would get very tired of it, because it's this vibrations that, and Swami says that, you know, all art is an expression of vibrations. We'll come to that more in a few moments. But the other thing that I wanted to say about intuition, I remembered. Was he was talking about you can't be intuitive unless you're non-attached. And the thing that blocks intuition the most, when we just give a class on how to develop intuition, the single thing that makes intuition the most difficult to access is when you have a bias in one way or another. That God wants to tell you something, but if you're pre-committed in one way or another, that pre-commitment makes it very hard to hear the voice of the Spirit. If you're attached to, even a lot of times in artistic expression, we just get attached to a certain way of doing things. I know in the years of my working to become a writer to the extent that I am, which is by no means at all an accomplished writer, but I have certainly worked at it intermittently. I've worked at it intermittently for a long time. I think that would be like to say exactly what it is. But I've observed, you know, when you're after you've written something and you're editing, you have to be very detached even from your own words. And I've watched lots of times myself write something and I'll just refuse to take out paragraphs that don't fit because I like them. You know, or somebody will be have written a song and they'll just lack a particular line, but the song has evolved in such a way that that line no longer belongs. But they're not detached enough to really see that it no longer belongs, because you become attached even to your own creative output. Many of you are nodding your heads because you know that. And you can't feel anymore that this doesn't belong here anymore. And that's the most obvious, at least by that point you've accomplished something. But a lot of times we just have a bias, you know, I want to write a happy song or a sad song. I know when I had to, someone asked me on Swami's 75th birthday, or I think it was her 70th birthday maybe, someone, I'd written a comic song for, I sometimes take Swami's melodies and write comic lyrics. Swamiji said, I have a genius for writing comic lyrics, although you can't really be a genius at comic lyrics. He said, you were Rodgers and Hammerstein. He was just joking, of course, but what he was saying was, he was actually trying to teach me something very serious. Because, of course, writing comic lyrics means nothing to me. I do it better than I do a lot of other things. Because I'm completely detached. What do I care? I'm just writing comic lyrics to a little song. And so, in fact, I can do it very much better than I can do many things that are very important, because it's not that important, right? And so it's one of the reasons Swami, you know, just absurdly, he even suggested once that we go into business together. He would write melodies and I would write the comic lyrics and we would write commercials together. He actually suggested that. But anyway, so I had written for David's 50th birthday, I took Swami's song Bluebell and wrote a Happy Birthday David. Happy birthday, David, 50 years today, and so on like that. It was just a little ditty. So for Swami's 70th birthday, someone thought it would be fun if I wrote a little ditty and that we all sang it together, right? And I tried very hard to write a little ditty, but there was no way to. It came out to be an extremely serious song. There was just no way. And instead of the image that, you know, had been there, that we would all just sort of do this sort of happy little number, I mean, it was just totally different than that. And I was there in that. I kept trying to force out, you know, what we had preconceived we were going to do, and there was just absolutely no way it would come. I just had to shift it over and do something completely different. But if I had been determined to write a comic song, I probably could have eventually gotten something else, but it never would have worked. You know, many times, I'm sure all of you who have done things, you just have to wait and see what it's going to say. Swamiji is at the point with his writing where he doesn't know from paragraph to paragraph what he's going to write. I mean, what to speak of a book outline? He has no idea. He just starts writing because he's just been in it so much. I mean, he used to be a little different than that, but now it's just how he does it. He just waits to see what it's going to do. And it shows him what it's going to do, and then he works with what it's done. And he's just completely impartial. Whatever it's supposed to be, that's all it's supposed to be. And he writes, too. You know, he says he's never written a single note that wasn't absolutely sincere and that just wasn't as clearly as he could make it exactly what it was supposed to be. Not preference, not what he liked, but just exactly what it was supposed to be. Now, you can see how much you have to work to be able to be like that. But that's the kind of intuition. Whatever it's supposed to be, that's what I'll write. I'm not trying to... And whenever you try to have an agenda, I'm going to show somebody that I can do this better. I'm going to make this one different than the other one. It's always a mess. Everyone knows it. It's just a horrible mess. Swamiji says the one time somebody said to him that, oh, Swami, you write so beautifully. You must have been Shakespeare in a past life. And he tells the story. He says, the only time you ever had writer's block. I can believe that. He said, he sat down to write. And this thought was in his mind, mustn't disappoint my public. You know? And he said, for the life of him, he couldn't make one sentence come out right. He said he just spent the longest time just flipping words around, and there was just he had no idea how to do it. And then he finally realized that this thought was in his mind, you know, that he had been Shakespeare in a past life and he was a great writer. And he just banished that thought, and immediately all the words fell into place. You know? So sometimes when we're having difficulties with what we're doing, we have to realize there's some lack of alignment. And if we can get ourselves back into alignment, then it works. And there's many other reasons that he talks about too, But that's a very important one. Intuition won't flow if we have an attachment. Very often that attachment is ego in some form or another. Either we're afraid that we're not going to do it well enough, or we're proud, we think we're going to do it really well, or, you know, or any one of those alternatives. Yes?
Yeah.